Between the Wasatch Mountains and the Bonneville Salt Flats, deep in the heart of Salt Lake City, Utah, this is Culture Crash.
Moisturizing. Welcome to episode 3 of Culture Crash, where this week is a very special timey-wimey episode.
Yay, timey-wimey.
We're going to be talking about modern Doctor Who.
It's going to get a little wibbly-wobbly, too.
Yeah, and it's going to go ding when there's stuff.
And we have all watched the Day of the Doctor special, and we're impatiently waiting for the Christmas special to come.
Yes, we have all watched the 50th anniversary special, including Crystal, who's
including
never watched
me.
An episode of Doctor Who in her life.
Well, I dabble in Doctor Who, but I never like. But that was because it was on after Red Dwarf. I think I've mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. I used, you know, watched it because it was on after Red Dwarf.
Gotcha.
She's got an undergraduate in Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Very undergraduate.
Whereas you and I are master's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
now this is kind of like my dilemma is, can you be a half Whovian?
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. See? And then you say, yeah.
So here's the deal.
I say yes because here's the problem. You're technically a half Whovian because you don't watch a lot of the older stuff, and I have.
Well, I consider her like, she's a pretty invested Whovian. You can
be completely invested in the first 7 seasons, and I'm taking nothing away from you, but if you're going to start talking about being half Whovian and all Whovian, that's a large catalog, and you're only sampling 7 seasons and specials out
well
of
see,
that
here's how
large
then
catalog.
Here's how I would describe it. Crystal has an associate's in Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
I have my bachelor's in Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, your PhD.
Yeah.
Because you're full-on old Whovian, new Whovian.
I have a doctorate, but I don't have my master's because there's tons of episodes that
because
are still
because you don't
want to
be a master in Doctor Who.
So, and here's the funny
part. Do
you
get it? Because
yes.
The master?
Oh, look at the punniness. And here's the fun part, which for me is kind of interesting, like, because I grew up watching it on PBS, the older stuff, mm-hmm. and then watched the new one come of age. It used to be that Doctor Who fans were the lowest of the low geeks.
They were the LARPers.
They were below LARPers.
Oh.
In the food chain, they were the bottom feeders. Like,
so
they were the ones, and I'm, you know, I suffered for it. You know, the mm-hmm. idea that you like a particular show, which is cheesy, mm-hmm. you know, Slider
oh,
fans
it was
can relate to
so
me.
So much more cheesy, too. I remember watching it after Red Dwarf and thinking, this is weird. But I watched it because it was weird.
So then, Gavin, now, whatever year this is, 2013.
Yeah. 2014, maybe by the time.
Oh, so by the time this airs, it'll be 20. Anyway, okay, now with it being 2014, that sounds weird.
I know.
It's time.
How weird is it for you to see this huge Doctor Who like revolution? Because now Doctor Who is so mainstream, you can't walk into a Hot Topic without being slapped in the face by Doctor Who stuff.
I found Doctor Who stuff at Gorman's, which is like a Ross.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's only a matter of time before you can buy a TARDIS keychain at the dollar store.
Yeah. And at Barnes & Noble, too, they have huge Doctor Who displays.
Well, they're going to have them at the 7-Eleven.
Like, how is that for you?
It's cool, but I feel slightly out of place because for years it was
not accepted.
It was this thing in the back, like anything Doctor Who. It felt like, you know, your game store or your comic book store. It was sitting in the back where you would find the D&D monster manual and the RPG roll dice games that nobody plays anymore. Like, it was this geekdom that was talked about but not really talked about. It's just, you know, it's your secret geek fetish, if you will.
Yeah,
you
know, secret fetish.
Of all the BBC stuff you could be addicted to, like Monty Python and Ab Fab and Not the 6 o'clock News and all that stuff. This is the one where, you know, you liked it, but you didn't talk about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can be a proud Doctor Who fan. I've got the 11-foot Fourth Doctor scarf sitting in the other room I can bring out here and strangle people with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, It's one of those things where it was kind of cool to watch it grow, and now it feels almost surreal to see it dominate the way that it has.
Mm.
And also, it feels a little also kind of weird to hear British people be like, see, we told you.
it is truly the best.
That's why we sent it to you.
So I had this question asked. A girl at work had asked me this question once upon a time.
Mm-hmm.
She had asked me what Doctor Who was about and if she would like it. And I automatically said, no, you would not like it. Because it's not the type of show that she's into. However, let's say somebody comes up to you and says, what is this? For me, it's difficult to even fathom. Because now it's in this, like, surreal, everybody knows what Doctor Who is.
Yeah.
But let's say somebody comes up to you and says, what is Doctor Who about? How would both of you describe it?
I've had this conversation more than once. There is no simplistic version.
Exactly. Like, you can't simplify
no,
it.
There's
but let's say somebody's a total novice.
Complete novice. Like, they've lived
Doctor
in a cave.
No idea what Doctor Who is about.
So Doctor Who is a time traveler from another planet. He's an alien, right?
Okay.
He lives in this time machine that they call the TARDIS. Don't explain to them what the TARDIS
no,
is.
No.
Just tell them he can travel to any point in space and any point in time. And that's all you need to tell them about it, because that's mm-hmm. the most anybody who doesn't invest themselves in the show is going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wherever he wants to go, he can be there, right?
Mm-hmm.
He basically stole it and is gallivanting across the universe, saving people's lives and universes and trying to bring peace to the universe in his own way while having adventures. And he just happens to take along companions who all seemingly come from the UK.
Right. Okay,
true.
Is that? That's about it in a nutshell without getting into deep specifics.
Yeah. And then, okay, Crystal, who's...
Yeah, no, that's basically, mine would be very simple. I would probably say it's Doctor Who is a time traveler,
mm-hmm.
and he gets into, you really have to watch it to get more than that from it. You know, I could try to explain stuff to you, but you're just...
Yeah.
It's a sci-fi fantasy. If you're into that kind of stuff, give it a shot. And mm-hmm. I might even recommend them starting from The Day of the Doctor.
Really?
Because that's
kind of where you started.
Yeah, that's kind of where I started. I mean, I've watched here and there, and then I have my middle daughter that's really into it that I watch a few episodes with, and she keeps me updated and keeps me, you know, in the loop as to what's going on. So,
gotcha.
But I might even suggest starting there.
Interesting. That is a very good place. I think, So let's talk about The Day of the Doctor.
Okay,
Actually, no. Well, let's wait.
Okay, so do we want to, we've kind of given, let's say somebody comes up to you and says, should I start watching Doctor Who? What are you going to, from your culture crash perspective,
mm-hmm.
say, yes, you should, no, you shouldn't?
Three questions.
Say, yeah.
Do you like science fiction?
Okay.
Are you okay with not understanding everything all at once?
Okay. And then they'd be like, what do you mean? You're like, okay, you're not okay with
it. And are you fine with the idea that the entire world centers around what's happening in Britain?
Oh, really? That's the question you would ask?
Those are the three questions. Because here's the thing. We're an American audience. Let's stop with the idea that America is the greatest country that's ever been born. All right?
Okay.
There are parts of the world. There are parts of the world that don't give two shits about us. That is reality.
Right.
And so, when you have shows that are made in Britain, or made in France, or made in Germany, guess what? They're gonna be focused on that country.
Mm.
So the thing with Doctor Who is there's a lot of UK terminology, a lot of British jokes, a lot of phrases that I'm willing to bet that even you just don't get.
Probably.
Like, you hear them and you're like, I don't know what he said, but the way that he said it, it's supposed to be a joke in this show. And even the aliens speak with some of that same British dialect. For some people, that's a hell of a bridge to cross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's the reason why we have a Life on Mars version in America.
Right.
Or
so
had.
Right. Like, I guess, that is a good question to ask, because I guess there are a lot of people who just aren't okay with British television.
Yeah, there is some British humor, British
like,
television, you
like
just
I
don't get it. You're like, What?
Right? I think it's hilarious. Like, I had posted on Facebook recently, I defy anyone to watch Mr. Bean and not laugh. And I got a lot of responses from people who were like, show's not funny at all.
You're like,
I'm like,
what's
how?
Wrong with you?
It's hit or miss.
Oh, God,
it's
really
so
funny.
Is.
It's
oh,
very slapsticky. Yeah,
however,
I don't know
I'm
how slapsticky. It's pretty funny.
I am one of the few people that like a lot of Blackadder, and Blackadder
oh
is
oh, my
very
gosh, Blackadder. Hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious.
And I love Red Dwarf.
Red
that's
Dwarf.
Right.
Red Dwarf.
That's
Monty Python. Mm-hmm. The ultimate in sketch comedy, there are people where it's hit or miss.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
See, that's why in shows like that, you have to have multiple writers.
Exactly.
Like, I remember learning about that.
So the biggest problem... I wouldn't say it's its biggest problem. I take that back. One of the bigger problems that some fans will have is that it's not an Americanized show. It mm-hmm. is definitely set in London. Everything happens. We have control of everything, and everything controls us, you know?
So then do you think that because of how huge Doctor Who is right now, mm-hmm. that America would try to remake it?
America tried to remake it.
Did they?
The 96 movie.
Oh.
I know. This is some Whovian.
I was gonna say this.
This
episode is mostly about modern Doctor Who.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying. You know, there's an example there, and clearly we saw the repercussions of that. He did a movie, and nothing happened.
Interesting.
But it's just that. It's just that idea of. I don't know. I don't think you can remake Doctor Who in America. Like, you could remake The Office in America, you know,
mm-hmm.
that translated well.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's an everyday situation. Doctor Who with the box is very specific to
right.
the UK. You can't stick him in a phone booth.
Superman
changes in the phone booth.
Travels through space and time.
And they don't exist here anymore.
No.
There is no phone booths anymore.
The little blue box.
Let's bring them back.
The little blue box, apparently, they still randomly exist in London. They haven't all been taken
They're
down.
Mostly red now.
That's the telephone. The police. The blue
oh,
box.
Oh, the police box.
Wow. Hi. Welcome to that conversation.
Shut up.
We get it wrong sometimes, guys. We're not perfect.
Yeah, seriously. So, let's say somebody wants to start watching Doctor Who.
Mm.
I started with Christopher Eccleston, so in the 2005 reboot.
Yeah.
Reboot or revival? I guess revival.
It's a little of both.
Because it continues from Classic Who.
Somewhat. I mean, if we're going to get real into depth on this, you're essentially thrown into Doctor Who after he's been alone for a while. The short version on this is in the Day of the Doctor, you see the Day of the Doctor, you know, he does his thing.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. And he starts to transform at the end of the episode into Eccleston.
Right, which I...
You don't like?
No.
You don't like?
Well, it's not that I don't like it. I thought this series was going to... I thought the whole thing was going to go a completely different way than it did.
Hmm.
Anyway, we'll get
to
it.
So essentially what happens is... Eccleston's doctor has been alone for a while. And in fact, the Eighth Doctor had been alone for a while, as you could see. He
mm-hmm.
he had no companion at the time when they changed the little special that they made. So you're being reintroduced to this doctor post-tragedy after he's had some time with himself, and he just happens to find his next companion while saving her from, you know, the molded plastic people.
Who is Rose Tyler?
Rose Tyler.
Oh, my favorite.
Your favorite
my
companion.
Favorite companion.
So is she a popular companion? Everybody is like...
I think
now it's really tough to say because like...
I think at this point in time it's a tie between her and Amelia Pond with fans. It just depends on whether you like
blonde I think a lot
or brunette.
The
or redhead, sorry.
I think a lot of the newer fans who like started with Matt Smith, their
mm-hmm.
favorite companion is going to be Amy Pond. When really, the real companion in that whole series is Rory. Let's be real.
Where are we going?
Rory's the real companion.
I don't like this. Why are we doing this?
That's a terrible impression.
I don't care. That's what his character feels like to me. He's the unfortunate tag along. It's just like, oh, I don't want to go, but you're going with him, so I gotta go.
He's the real companion.
He's the companion.
So Christopher Eccleston starts out with Rose Tyler as his companion, and then later on regenerates into David Tennant. So explain the regenerations.
So Time Lords, being aliens, they have this trick. Do you want the full explanation, like the TV series version, like why they need to change doctors?
No, or God. Just,
okay. So the short version is that they have a way of cheating death, and the way to cheat death is that they change. Their entire body's molecular structure dies and then changes and regenerates into something new. And part of that means that it's not the original person that you started out with to some degree. It gets a new face and a new body structure. And eventually the mind catches up and remembers.
So there are two things that are, to me, absolutely amazing about Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
The show can go on forever.
Yes.
You have a guy who can travel to any point in space and in any point in time. Therefore, limitless, infinite stories that can be told.
Yes.
And because he can regenerate, it's not like you have an excuse to replace your lead character with different actors.
Exactly.
However, it is explained in the show that he only gets so many regenerations.
They found a way around that, they say.
Which is what I thought they were going to touch on in the 50th.
You thought, but see, clearly,
and, like,
clearly, like, Stephen Moffat ruined your life.
Stephen Moffat. I'll talk about
it. The theory is that he only had,
12 regenerations.
Depending on what canon you're looking at and which doctor, it's anywhere between 10 to 12. Which means when they started this new series, a lot of fans pointed out, you know, now that Eccleston left after one season, you can't really pull this trick all that often. According to the staff of the show, they have a way around it. Which, if you look at it, is what they did with the Eighth Doctor before we got to Day of the Doctor, because he regenerated into John Hurt.
Right.
So technically he's past his regeneration points.
Yeah.
So the doctor you're waiting for with his
eyes technically shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah.
I was convinced Stephen Moffat was going to end the show when they announced when they no, well, at the end of season 7 when they show John Hurt as the doctor, I'm like, Stephen Moffat's going to end the show. He is going to crush everyone's hearts and end the show.
I don't know why you got that, because
I have
just because he's in charge of the show doesn't mean he owns the show. It's
I
a BBC
know.
Thing,
I
and
have
when there's money to be made.
I have this weird relationship with plots that I like. I like it when stories have sad endings.
So you weren't a fan of Lost then,
dude? Yeah, I guess. Anyway, meh. So, Chris Eccleston regenerates into David Tennant, my favorite doctor of all, actually. And then he and Rose Tyler romp around.
Now, let's before we get into romping around, let's get into this for a second. I like Eccleston.
Okay.
What was your problem with Eccleston?
It's not that I have a problem with Eccleston.
You clearly have a problem with Eccleston, because he's your least favorite.
It's a close tie between him and Matt Smith. Okay, he's not my least favorite. I guess I would say Matt Smith is probably my least favorite.
Okay.
Well, anyway. Okay, let me be real for a second. When I started watching Doctor Who is very, very important to me. I was going through a serious life change when I started watching Doctor Who. Doctor Who got me through like one of the toughest times of my life. And
do
that's
you want to talk about that life change?
I was going through a breakup.
Okay.
Like a serious breakup.
We won't talk about it.
Anyway, Doctor Who, like, I don't want to say it saved my life, but Doctor Who's like a very important piece of my life now.
It was a thing that you watched to cope.
Yeah. And so while I watched Christopher Eccleston, I was really like mentally distracted. So I just, you know.
Well, and so I haven't ran across a lot of people that love him as the doctor.
Yeah.
A lot of people are not so happy with him, and I don't know if it's because he was so dark compared to,
you know, like a brooding, balding doctor.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's they like the fourth doctor and like
wacky.
The wacky mad
doctor.
Yeah, crazy.
To me, that's odd, because if you go back and look at Doctor Who's history, I know we're delving into the older stuff, Eccleston to a degree reminds me of Doctors 2 through 4.
Well, then,
number four is the one that everybody loves.
He
had fun, but he was super serious a lot of the time, except for the jelly babies.
He was not very serious. I mean,
he was a grown up doctor. And then when they started going for youth from 5 and then 6, you know, and that's when the more, it's hard to believe, the more wackier stories really started to come about.
Well, yeah, they started taking acid or something. They're like, have you seen the doctors? You should watch some of those. Yeah.
Like I said, I haven't seen any of the old Doctor Who stuff. Yeah.
But, you know, like, and it's funny to me that those are actually the doctors that, for many fans, are the ones they like the least, because it was you just got done with I just forgot his name, number four,
Tom Baker.
I'm like, he's the fourth doctor. He has
just left my mind. And then you start hitting your stride with these others after you had this one that everybody loves so much, right?
Yeah. Well, and is he the longest running Doctor Who? The fourth?
He was.
Yeah.
He went from 74 to 82, I believe. I could have that wrong in the back of my head.
I can look it up.
But he essentially became the one. Like when you see a Simpsons episode and they make fun of Doctor Who, you're not looking and seeing a David Tennant or a Matt Smith.
No, you're seeing
it's
the
always
four.
The one, well, with the scarf.
The scarf is very recognizable. I think maybe because he was the longest run and he brought it to the forefront of popularity. I don't want to, you know, it became more popular during, and I don't know if it was because he was such a long doctor.
Yeah.
But
for me, it's so weird to see the juxtapose at how you had Eccleston was kind of an embodiment of the more serious doctors that the people loved back then. He only got one season, and now everybody loves the wackiness from the Russell T. Davies era with David Tennant and the episodic still wackiness from Matt Smith. That is more of the 5, the 6th, and the 7th Doctor.
Having watched the 50th anniversary special, I think to go back and watch that first series with Christopher Eccleston is gonna mean a lot more, because he is the angry doctor.
Yeah.
And you understand why he's the angry doctor.
He's post-war doctor.
You don't exactly get that.
He's after Vietnam.
He's the PTSD doctor.
Yeah.
PTSD doctor.
Which is why, you know, there's great moments in there where Jackie's mom is hitting on him. Rose's mom, Jackie Tyler. Jackie's hitting on him, and he's just like, "Nope," and walks away. Like, you know, he's clearly not interested in getting involved with anybody or anything. But Rose comes about and starts playing an integral part, and it kind of recaptures his love for having somebody with him.
Right,
which is why he goes back and he's just like, well, by the way, I mentioned it can go through time. Can't do Eccleston either.
Number of series for the fourth Doctor, he was in 7 series.
Wow. For those of you who don't know, the Brits call seasons series.
Yes.
And they divide, they don't call them episodes. That, you know, they're technically episodes, but like 4 parts to a single episode.
So right. 172 episodes is what he appeared in. Is what this is. So that's probably why the most recognizable.
Interesting.
That's why they call. Well, that's why I was, after I watched The Day of the Doctor, they kept calling him the Doctor. The fourth Doctor is the Doctor. I was like, oh, I wonder
interesting.
Why.
Interesting. So
for me, it was, I got a kinship to that. And of course, it was the first time it was introduced, like that first series. So for me, it was like, yes, this is my Doctor, right?
How did we get here? Oh, we're talking about who our doctor is?
Yeah.
Why you disliked Eccleston, now I'm on. I like Eccleston.
Right.
So Eccleston is your doctor?
Eccleston is my doctor.
Really? Out of all of the doctors?
Yeah, right now, yeah. We'll see how Capelli does, but right now I put in order it is Eccleston, Tennant, Smith.
Okay.
For me. Now, why do you like Tennant, though?
Or
why do you put Tennant above the rest?
He's just so cute.
Is that it? That's it.
No, I think I like how passionate he is as a doctor. I just love his doctor performance. Of the doctors that I have seen, I like his the most. I like his version of the doctor the most.
And what draws you in about that?
He's not as angry as Eccleston. He's not as serious as Eccleston. And he's not as wacky cock-a-doodle-doo as Matt Smith. Matt Smith, here's the thing about Matt Smith, is...
The flailing of the arms and the tie and
he's so all over. He's the bipolar doctor. He is so wacky and so annoying when he's wacky that I'm like, oh my god, I would rather watch Christopher Eccleston be super serious than how wacky Matt Smith is. But then Matt Smith goes off on these dark, passionate monologues. Like, I just watched Rings of how do you pronounce that? Rings of Akatan or something like that.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
From Series 7.
Yeah.
And he gives this whole speech about all the things that he's seen and all the things that he knows. And he's very dark and
broody.
And take it all kind of doctor. And he's fierce. And I like that about Matt Smith. But then he goes right back to being whoop-de-doo-de-doo. And I cannot stand it.
And I do these things, and I flail my arms, and I make grand
speeches.
And fish
fingers and custard, because I'm wacky.
See, and that's something
that I... a fez. I'm going to wear a fucking fez all the time.
But I see that in Tennant, too. Because here's the thing, and this is more on British television. They do a lot of monologues. Mm-hmm. If you watch Doctor Who closely enough, and this is one of the fun things, aside from if you ever hear the phrase, I'll explain later, which comes up a lot.
Right.
I'll show you the BBC special they did on Red Nose Day years ago with Rowan Atkinson playing a doctor.
Oh.
Have you ever seen that? It also has Hugh Grant playing one, too.
Hugh Grant?
Hugh Grant.
Not Hugh Laurie?
Not Hugh Laurie. Hugh
Grant. I'd rather see Hugh Laurie as a doctor. Oh, my God.
I'll send it to you. God. You'll enjoy it if we don't watch it here. But they go into long exposition as the enemy stands there, which is a little bit of charm. But at the same time, you can tell they're just giving them time to do exposition and emote and give you a reason to love them and charm them. And I can't tell you how many episodes I sit there and I watch Tennant and Smith together just do this long walkabout talk. Well, I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on right here. And the enemy's just standing there like, you know, what's going on? Why shouldn't we be shooting him with the guns in our hands?
Yeah, I don't quite know how to explain it like the very precisely, but Tennant is definitely, I like his performance as the doctor more.
And there's more, and I blame this more on the writing than Tennant, but there are things about Tennant's doctor that annoy me, like the Titanic episode where the angels immediately recognize him as the higher authority once the other guy burns in the fire and raise him to the heavens back to the bridge.
Well, and then
there's the episode we're going to talk about because it's both a joke to us.
I clap if you believe in Time Lords. I do believe in Time Lords. I do. That was ridiculous.
Where he went from being this tidy old guy in a cage to Obs flailing.
I do believe in Time Lords. David Tennant died for your sins.
And you know what we're going to do? We're going to take back the entire year everybody's been suffering right after.
Which is why I'm going to wait to get to the 50th.
We'll get to the 50th, we'll get to the 50th. You know, I'm just saying... Like, there's some ridiculous shit.
I know.
I'm a fan, but even I admit, like, and we were discussing this before Crystal got here, Agatha Christie and a giant fucking bee.
I know.
You know?
I know. There's some stupid episodes.
You can't be on air for 50 years and not have a few
all of
bombs.
Time and
there's
all
some
of
fool's
space.
Gold
there's
some in the mind.
Yeah. All of time and all of space, there is some stupid stuff going on at some point.
Stupid, cheesy crap out there.
So at one point, I'm gonna pull later on a list of like the top 12 episodes.
Oh. From the first
from
7 years?
From the modern.
Alrighty.
But through a series of events, Rose Tyler leaves, stops being companion, which if it were me, I would never stop being his companion.
Well, she had real no choice.
I know. I
got
sobbed
into another universe.
I sobbed like a little baby.
I did watch that episode too.
Did you cry?
I did. I was telling you, I cried on the Day of the Doctor too. But
she eventually got what she wanted.
Ball baby.
Right? Every fanfic writer's dream.
Yeah. Two David Tennants.
Two, right? And one's half human, so he'll grow old with you. Anyway, and so then we get the new companion, Martha Jones, who's a doctor and left her studies to go be a companion for a while.
I liked her. I hated her family.
I hated Martha. She's
really?
My least favorite companion.
Least favorite.
She, yes. She's my least favorite companion.
Because for me, it's Bobbity Boo, who we're about to run into.
Donna Noble?
Yeah.
I love Donna Noble.
Donna
hated her at
first. Annoying after
a while. Hated her at first. And then I watched a couple of her episodes again. Like, and compared to Martha, she's great. She is a great companion. Because she's feisty.
I compare the other one to the one that's with Matt Smith now, Jenna Coleman.
Jenna Louise Coleman.
Yeah. What's her?
The companion that's too sexy.
The companion that looks like she could fit in your pocket.
Right. Go in Crystal's little pocket village.
Yes. Well, I don't know. She doesn't have enough personality.
Oh. Really? Oh, my gosh.
Clara.
I don't know.
There we
Clara.
Go. But I like her because she had enough brains to tell the doctor he was full of it.
Donna Noble?
No, the...
Oh, Clara? Martha?
No, Martha.
No, really? Because I feel like Donna,
like
she's smart enough.
Like in the city where everybody's living in their cars.
Oh my god.
You know what
gridlock?
I mean? You don't like that episode?
No!
I love that episode.
Really? It's a traffic jam episode.
It showed the future of hell.
It's the traffic jam
it's
episode.
New New York City with the apple grass.
It also reminds me of The Fifth Element. Like if Doctor Who visited the Fifth Element.
And they were stuck in Rush Hour.
Yeah. Now, could you imagine?
But the idea that she... The other companions, it looks like they're along for the ride, and on occasion they get lucky, which is kind of a theme that goes throughout the years. Martha actually had some brains to her. She had a damn doctorate. And the idea that she could just, you know, tell him, you don't know what you're doing, do you?
But
you know?
But Donna is very important to the doctor.
Donna just screams at him half the time.
No, there is an episode in my list
There's
that I'm going to touch on.
Well, good for your list.
Called Turn Left, in which we encounter a universe where Donna is not the companion, and shit's fucked.
But I can also point... I see your list with a YouTube clip I could pull up of all of Donna's most annoying moments where all she's there for where all she's there for is to bitch and moan about her situation. They go to the Ood planet, and what does she do? She spends 2 minutes complaining about the cold, and then she goes and gets a jacket.
She's great.
She's the person who, if she won the lottery, she'd be like, oh, great, now I gotta buy a wallet.
Anyway, who comes after Donna? Nobody for a while. Kylie Minogue, right?
Kylie Minogue does the special. Essentially, if we're going to follow canon, Martha leaves on her own. The doctor runs into the Fifth Doctor for a brief thing. Have you seen that? Just before the Titanic episode? It was a holiday.
Oh, with the governor?
No. It was a, you know what Red Nose Day is over there?
Yeah.
It's a charity. They did a Doctor Who special for that, and it's the TARDIS crashes into itself, and he runs into the Fifth Doctor, and they meet each other and talk and everything.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I haven't seen it.
We can watch that later. But anyway, and then he gets on the Titanic. The Titanic misses the Queen as she's coming out of the palace. See, that's kind of stuff I find annoying but funny at the same time. Like, they have a direct line to the Queen's bathroom.
Right.
And she's just, she comes out in a robe, it does a pendulum thing where it goes back in the sky, and then she waves at it.
Ridiculous.
And then he starts an investigation into the people whose fat are turning into small little children, and that's where he runs into Donna.
Oh. So then for a while, I guess he doesn't have a companion, and he regenerates into Matt Smith, and then start to travel with Amy Pond and Rory Williams, and along with some out-of-sync meetings with River Song, and then finally Clara Oswald.
See, I enjoyed the first season of that.
Yes. I do. I have to agree with you. I do like that first season with Amy Pond.
Because it actually, it's a nice little season. And it's also, if you look at it, it's an introductory piece.
Yeah.
Because I think the way that Stephen Moffat, when he took over for...
Russell T. Davies.
Yeah. When he looked at it, I think he said to himself, okay, we're now big, but we could be bigger. How do we get bigger? We got to introduce this thing to as many people as possible. So for that first season, and I think it's in this, or season 5 and season 6, they do that 30-second intro.
Yeah.
My name's Amy Pond.
Yeah.
This is the Doctor. He flies around in a tortoise, you know.
Yeah.
You sound like you regret that.
I just...
It was that
the whole thing.
It was their way of saying, oh, by the way, are you American or Canadian?
And let's you don't get know you what caught
the
hell, up.
If you don't know what Doctor Who is, here,
yeah.
There you go.
Yes, that is nice. Also, another character that should be mentioned, Captain Jack Harkness, who makes an appearance in a couple of episodes and gets his own spin-off series called Torchwood.
Which you can completely ignore.
No.
Yeah.
First 2 seasons you should probably watch.
Not really.
First 2 seasons I watched in conjunction with a couple of Doctor Who seasons.
You're not missing a lot, folks. I'm sorry.
Whatever.
You like Jack. You love Captain Jack because you like John Barrowman.
If you, God, if he wasn't gay.
Do you want to talk about your story from Phoenix Comic Con where you got to hug him?
He touched me. I paid $40 for him to touch me.
That was well worth it.
I'm so glad.
He felt nothing.
I'm so glad he was my first celebrity that like I've ever like fangirled over because mm-hmm. now I'm like, oh, celebrities. Him, I was like, oh my god, thank you. Yep, thank you. Oh my god.
Hey, and he was super nice, too.
He was super nice, but like,
one of these days, I'm going to find a way for Dave Grohl to call your cell phone.
What up, Dave?
If you think she melted over John Barrowman, wait until you see her speechless over
you
a phone
just
call.
Wait. You just wait.
Hey, Rebecca, it's Dave Grohl.
That's
the future.
I don't want to talk about that. Anyway, what? So with Amy Pond and Rory, there's a stupid episode. It's not a stupid episode. There's a stupid plot arc in which they have a baby.
They have a kid.
And her name, they name her Melody Pond. And in the episode, she's given like a blankety thing. And because in their language, they don't have words for what her name is, they call her River Song. Mm. And, so she later, you know, turns out to be a huge... She actually shows up in David Tennant's run.
Yeah, and it's a good appearance when she comes in.
It's a great appearance when she comes in because
she's got the journal.
Because she's got the journal of, like, her timeline with him.
And she realizes that, A, this is the first time he's ever met her.
And it's the last time she sees him.
Yeah.
If you go back and you rewatch all of it, it's very heartbreaking. When you watch everything for the first run through, you're like, oh, that's like whatever. But then if you go, like, once you understand everything and you go back and watch it, you're like a mess because it all makes sense and you know just what their relationship is.
Which incidentally is slightly disappointing about the Matt Smith era.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of it.
You don't.
You get glimpses.
It's very disappointing.
And the one whole episode that they film in America, by the way, filmed in Utah.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Their whole 200 years in between when they're like with each other is handled in about 30 seconds going through a diary.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like we couldn't get one or two adventures with just them. Just the two of them.
Right.
Just the two.
Yeah, their whole I really like the idea of their relationship. Like the last time she sees him is the first time he sees her. Mm-hmm. The last time that he sees her is the first time she sees him. I like that idea. They don't execute it very well. Like, yeah, they just don't execute it very well.
So, okay, so I guess the biggest question on our minds that we should be asking ourselves is why do we put Matt Smith at the bottom of the other two? Like, is it just the fact that, like, he was a replacement and we knew he was going to be a replacement and, like, it was a new showrunner? And
I feel like this is probably the most hipstery thing I've ever said.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were into Doctor Who before everybody else was. Matt Smith, to me, is that doctor that brought everyone on board.
Uh-huh.
And I, like, we were into Doctor Who before it was cool, you know?
You're right. That's the most hip tourist thing.
I know, and I feel dirty.
But to a degree, you are right.
Yeah.
Because, and we won't mention him by name. I'll just mouth it to you. He was not a Doctor Who fan until Matt Smith came around.
Ugh.
And you know what I mean? Like the person we're mentioning, we're not mentioning them by name. We're not going to mention their profession or what they're involved with or anything. So have fun guessing, closest friends. But this is a guy that you and I both know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ultimate geeks that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Could put us both to shame in a contest. We know.
Okay.
If you and I together teamed up, we would get our ass kicked by this guy.
Really?
You know what I mean? He's got the years on us.
She said,
I'm just saying.
It.
He was not a Doctor Who fan until Matt Smith came around.
See, and that says something to me.
Exactly.
Ugh.
That's why I agree with you on this. Is like you can get into a series, but then it's kind of like, I don't know, you're taking medicine and then all of a sudden ice cream is thrown into the mix, so it's easier to digest.
Do you think Matt Smith is super popular because he kind of looks like Daniel Tosh?
No.
He actually looks like one of my ex-boyfriends. Like, he reminds me a lot of one of my ex-boyfriends.
What is it with you and ex-boyfriends and Doctor
I
Who?
Know. It's right, my heartstrings.
I have no ex-girlfriends that look like any of the companions.
Oh.
Especially not Rory.
The true companion. So then how do you feel about Clara and her arc? Clara has a very cool story arc.
Clara I enjoyed. And I thought what they did, even though, you know, there's some people who would call it cheesy, I thought it was brilliant.
So on mine and Crystal's other show that we do.
Which we won't name.
Oh, dang. What was it that she said? Was that Doctor Who was very good at leaving breadcrumbs and then going back to pick them up.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what they did with Clara. So I just started rewatching season 7 with Matt Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And they introduce her. And you first see her in this Dalek episode. In which, by the way, they totally erase the knowledge of the Doctor from the Daleks' history bank or whatever. Totally
That's
negating however many thousands of years of Doctor of the Time Lords versus Daleks.
They didn't quite negate it.
Really?
I bet you, again, timey-wimey, I bet you there's a loophole in there somewhere where essentially all she did was save them for a brief moment.
I doubt that.
There's all this talk in that series about how he's going through and erasing himself from history.
They do that with Matt Smith, and I think that's stupid.
But here's the thing.
Because he got too big or whatever.
I don't think it's a matter of that he got too big. I think it's a matter that you can't go pissing off the entire galaxy for centuries and not have everybody hold a grudge against you, which brought about the giant box to put him in.
Oh God. Anyway,
I'm not saying it's brilliant. I'm just saying there's an explanation behind this stuff that
I know. I just don't like it.
There are ways you have to find ways to continue a series like this because
all
as
of
we've
time
pointed
and
out,
all of space. There's however many other species that you can piss off.
There's only so much you can do with costume creation. And the fans want some of these old ones back. I'm not a fan of the Cybermen. I think they're one of the dumbest villains they've had. What did they do? They brought them back 4 times, and now they made them faster. They can run now. They brought the Daleks back in season 1, right? And for years, all those fuckers did was roll around on the ground. What did they do? They made it more terrifying because now they can glide upstairs.
Yeah, right. Now they hover and fly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to throw in something to extend these villains over the years that become, like, popular and heartfelt. Again, another one I don't like is the Angels.
The Weeping Angels?
The Weeping Angels.
I think that's a stupid villain.
I think they were great the one time that we saw them in the two-parter, right?
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The one where they turned the Statue of Liberty into one.
Oh. You tell me that not one person was looking at the Statue of Liberty.
Well, it was the 30s and it was dark. I'm kidding. That's what I tell people just to be alive.
It was
alive.
The 30s and it was dark. Are you kidding me?
I am.
Anyway, back to Clara. You first meet her as she's a Dalek, basically. She's a human that was turned into a Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
And then her character is like, you don't see her again, which is so funny because like you, if you are caught up on Doctor Who, like you were aware that, oh, they're getting a new companion. Oh, this is her. Wait, how is she already like in the show? And then you don't see her again for a couple of episodes until the Christmas episode with the snowman. And she's a nanny slash barmaid in the 1800s. And you're like, oh, wait, this is that same girl.
Exactly.
And the doctor's even like, wait, you're that same girl. And and then you don't see her again until like halfway through season 7, where the Wi-Fi is evil.
that evil Wi-Fi and the villain that they never explain.
Oh, right.
So there's another villain out there that we're still waiting to figure out.
Maybe that's another breadcrumb that they'll come back to.
Yeah, hopefully.
No, they do. It's the guy from The Snowman, The Great Intelligence.
Was it really?
Yeah, it is. It's The Great Intelligence.
But they killed The Great Intelligence the first time, and then they brought him back in a different form.
So maybe that's just another breadcrumb.
Yeah.
That they'll get back to.
And what was the guy that went into his time stream to kill him? Was that The Great Intelligence, too?
That's The Great Intelligence. Yes. Yeah. So
with all the faceless guys that look like demons.
Anyway, I want to go back to talking about how cool Clara is.
Okay.
So you see her in that Christmas episode. God damn, how did we get so off track?
Because we're awesome. God
and
damn.
Then they introduce her as like this just regular nanny, and then she goes off on adventures. And then she, to save the doctor's life because of the Great Intelligence thing, she inserts herself into the doctor's timeline and appears throughout all of his regenerations.
Yeah, which is a brilliant little piece of editing that they managed to do.
I think
both in that episode and the Heart of the TARDIS, where they, you know, she's running across.
Oh, the journey to the center of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where she finds out what his real name is, and of course they're just holding on to that chestnut as long as they can.
Yeah, but it's Steve.
I want to. It's Dave. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, no, Steve.
Steve.
I want to see more of that library though that she was running through, because you know, you know, there's some awesome shit in there that they don't talk about,
right? But I think that's a really that's probably one of my favorite story arcs. Is the whole thing with, like, her inserting herself into the doctor's timeline so that she appears randomly throughout his life.
Yeah.
So from there, BuzzFeed, that always delivers, in my opinion, has a list of, they rank every episode of the modern Doctor Who. They don't always get it right. They did it with Buffy, and they totally messed, like, they got it all wrong. but I kind of agree with the list that they have here.
Oh, are we going to go lowest to top, or?
Yes, worst to first.
Okay.
So do you want me to start at number 13 or number 12? Because number 13 is, well, might as well start here, is Turn Left, that episode where we see a world without Donna. It's a Wonderful Life.
I really don't like it.
Every time a bell rings, a TARDIS gets its Time Lord. I'm sorry.
The only good
I'm
part
really
about
sorry.
That episode is she finally gets to meet Rose.
Oh, Rose.
For like 5 minutes.
Love Rose.
And then it's back to being an annoying episode.
Hey. number 12 is the two-parter, the Pandorica opens in the Big Bang, which is the one where all of the species, you know, try to trap the doctor. And the doctor, he gives a great speech. It's one of those moments where I'm like, damn, Matt Smith is really good.
The one where he's just like, think about all those dark days, and you know, and then why don't you let somebody else give it a shot? And then they all fly off.
BuzzFeed nails it on the head wonderfully. In the end, the day is basically saved by wordplay in your stupid face, power of love. And then also, this is the episode where Rory is revealed as the true companion.
What? Because he sat
the
around
last
for 2,000 years.
I would like to meet a man.
I do
who
like
would wait 2,000 years for a woman. Mm-mm.
No. Unfortunately, that's Rory, and Rory doesn't really exist. Oh.
Well, in the end, he's a robot, basically.
I know how how weird is that? Like, just
right?
just to throw that in there. No wonder he could wait 2,000 years. He had nothing better to do.
He was a robot. Never mind. It all gets resolved when you know when the TARDIS explodes or whatever.
I like when he pokes him when he first sees him. He's just like, "What are you doing here?"
This episode, My Emotion, or this two-parter, My Emotions, Army of Ghosts, and Doomsday, David Tennant's doctor discards Rose on a beach in an alternate dimension because all the Daleks are attacking Manhattan. No, the Daleks are attacking the UK, obviously.
It's the mashup you've always wanted.
Cybermen versus the Daleks.
Yeah, robots versus robots.
Lazy robots versus slow robots.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. And then I'm trying to find, like, when I want to say, like, because there are a series of events. There's an alternate dimension, and they have teleporters through alternate dimensions, and the doctor can't go, but Rose is taken to save her life.
The short version of this is there's an alternate universe where, guess what? All the Cybermen have fucked the world over. Because we see part of it in one episode when they take over.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're all shooed away to this other universe, and now they've found a way through Torchwood. Again, stupid organization finding a way to bring them back.
That's an anagram for Doctor Who. Thanks,
yeah.
Gavin.
Yeah. So anyway.
I had no idea that was an anagram for Doctor Who.
I love... Did we discuss this earlier in another episode?
I think we might have.
I loved the car ride, where I'm just like, I tell her this, and the glow of shock that just goes over her face. Yeah, because we were driving through Sugar House.
Like, have you ever seen a light bulb go off over somebody's head?
We're passing up through 21st South, and as we're going up the hill, it's like she's getting smarter. Like,
watch me grow intelligent.
Dude, my mind is blown.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept going, shut up. That's not real. Shut up.
Anyway.
So Torchwood fucking up the world again. Great series there.
yeah.
They bring them back, and the doctor finds a way to shoo them all back off again.
Yeah. Everybody wins except Rose.
She wins later again.
Yeah. Number 10... Dalek, season 1, episode 6, featuring Christopher Eccleston.
C. Eccleston, right there.
Yeah.
Awesome. And it's another one where he gets to give great speeches, because mm-hmm. he's giving the one where he killed all of them off.
It's Eccleston's mesmerizing first confrontation with the temporarily helpless Dalek.
Dalek was in shitty shape. His arm was gone.
His his egg beater was gone. this is the...
And his plunger looked like he needed a replacement.
This was when, according to this article, the series was kicked into a higher gear. Let's see.
It kind of was.
Yeah.
It's really the first time you see a classic Who enemy, and you see them in the best and worst shape ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it blows itself up rather than continuing to live. You finally figure out what all those things on it are for.
Clearing toilets.
No, the little beads are just bombs waiting to happen.
Number 9, the two-parter Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone. Let's see. This episode features River's reintroduction. They're surrounded by weeping angels.
With an army made up of Vatican clerics or something.
There's one thing you never put into a trap.
Me.
Exactly. I don't even remember this episode.
Say it.
What?
What's the episode you don't remember?
Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
Okay. It's where River's in the spaceship. And they go to that one area, and they're like, it's a code. Nobody figured out what it said all these years. We're going to go see it. And it turns out to be a message from her and where to pick her up as she's flying out of an airlock. Ship crashes. They were carrying some precious cargo, which happened to be one of the Weeping Angels. And the ship crashes into what is essentially an angel graveyard.
Oh.
And the crack in time eventually swallows them whole.
Okay, the crack in time.
The crack in time is a good... That was a nice little way of making it all come together.
Yeah.
As opposed to the silence.
I had a terrifying thought on our way back from Phoenix Comic Con. It's like however late. It's like late at night. We're driving. And I'm like half asleep. And I'm thinking, what if there's a silence in the car with us right now? And like, I was like, nope, not sleeping anymore. Because that was like the most terrifying thought I could have at that moment.
You couldn't just put your hand over and double check. Just like.
You would forget.
But you physically, you put your hand there.
But then obviously you look, because that's what you do.
You could just do this. Look the other
hey,
direction.
Hey, silence.
are you there, silence?
It's
just
creepy.
Take a knife and stab the car.
Creepy. And then I shared that with the other two people in the car. They're like, oh, thanks a lot. Number 8, Vincent and the Doctor. One of my favorite episodes. Featuring Bill Nighy, by the way.
Yeah.
This is the episode where they go to visit Vincent Van Gogh. And Vincent Van Gogh is like this sad sap. And he like almost kills himself or something, and they save him.
See, that's one of the few that's made me tear up. Because
no,
at
I sobbed.
Because at the end, she's just like, time to go see all the new works from Vincent Van Gogh. Like, we're going to change history. They get up there, and, you know, I forget the line, the one that he says to her. Just like...
Oh, I don't know.
Just, you know...
So I'll read to you what BuzzFeed has written here. Rom-com king Richard Curtis delivers an unexpected and unexpectedly moving Who story. There's no meet cutes or last minute dashes to the airport here. Just an unsettling, subtle, and very human portrayal of genius and depression. The monster is an afterthought, which is true. The monster in Vincent and the Doctor is just kind of like,
there to serve the purpose, because that's what attracted the Doctor to go there in the first place.
The conclusion, Tony Curran's wonderful Vincent being confronted with his own legacy in the modern world may seem to be laying it on too thick with its very unhooish athlete soundtrack, but damn it, it works brilliantly, even as you feel your tears being very deliberately jerked. And then there was the real ending, when we learned that not everyone can be saved. Anything else would have been cheap. Number 7 on the BuzzFeed list, Bad Wolf, The Parting of the Ways.
Yeah.
When Rose gets like all of this like Deus Ex Machina.
She looks into the heart of the TARDIS, and of course the TARDIS is like, oh, hello.
Oh.
Body I can embody.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. You never forget the trauma of your first regeneration, do you? For a whole new generation of fans, this was their first goodbye to a Doctor, and the two-parter hits all the right emotional notes on the way there, with the Doctor's two farewell speeches, one via hologram and the other moments before he gets glowy, being the tear-inducting high points. And gleefully anticipates a whole new generation of angry rage fans misusing the phrase Deus Ex Machina, as Rose is quite literally turned into a god from the machine.
Well, that's right, Barcelona.
Yeah, also, that's how it ends. Also, Barcelona!
They keep bringing up Barcelona, but they never go.
Number 6, The Doctor's Wife, written by Neil Gaiman.
Fucking good.
It is a very good episode. It's the episode in which the TARDIS is a physical...
Woman.
Woman.
Because I had watched this a few days ago in preparation. I figured it might come up. There's a planet outside of the universe that they try to explain and they can't. But the planet is alive. And it's been calling Time Lords to it and essentially killing them off and chopping up the bodies and giving them to these three people who are there. Don't know how they got there.
Yeah, it's messed up.
But they put the soul of the TARDIS into this one woman. And then the planet takes over the TARDIS and just starts fucking with
and so the
Amy and...
The Doctor?
No.
Sexy?
Sexy.
Which is the TARDIS's name.
No, Amy and Rory. And yeah, he keeps calling the TARDIS sexy in private. And it brings up a really fun conversation that I think only Gaiman could have come up with of like, what do you mean you stole me? How do you know I didn't steal you? I wanted to see the world. I want to see the universe. And, you know, like... Like, the TARDIS has a mind of its own. It allowed its doors to be unlocked.
It turns the TARDIS into a character.
I know.
It's incredible. And the final line, the TARDIS's final line, coming to an understanding that people are so much bigger on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Such good writing. Let's see. Number 5, Midnight, which is the episode I wanted to watch while we were waiting for Crystal, but Gavin was like, ugh, that episode.
Oh, please, do tell us.
It's Russell T. Davies' least Russell T. Davies episode. It's a very minimalist episode. I remember watching this episode by myself and thinking, this is scary. Because what it is they're on a train on a diamond planet, and there's this invisible monster that is taking over the people in the train. And that you don't see the monster. You never see the monster. But it's just a very, almost like terrifying episode.
Where it's slowly, and it's not taking over everybody. It possesses the one woman up in the front.
Mm-hmm.
It starts going through a pattern. It's, I'll admit, it's a good episode, but it's not exactly what I would call one of the best.
I think it's a very well-written episode because yes. a lot of the fear-inducing aspects of it come from the dialogue itself.
Exactly. And what would you do in that situation? How they very right? quickly turn into a mob.
It's like a Lord of the Flies situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, it's so good.
Written-wise, it's great. Oh, it's also where you get Alonzi.
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 Oh, my God, it's my favorite word ever.
Did you get your little goosebumps when they all went and they were doing the thing in Day of the Doctor where he's like, Geronimo!
Alonzi! And I'm like, ah!
And then just John Hurt like, oh, for God's sake.
I was like, I pray to God that would be his catchphrase if he got his own series. Oh, for God's sake. Oh, my. Oh. Number four, The Girl in the Fireplace.
Which is pretty damn good.
Which is pretty good. It has beautiful clockwork robots and a horse.
Has what's her name from, that stupid vampire show. That was on CBS for a while.
I don't know. They don't say it here.
Ah.
Vampire show.
With the vampire who's a detective, and she's working for a network that happens to be online only.
Oh, I don't know. What? <I'm> like, there was a show like this?
It was a one season, and it starred the guy who is now the star of Hawaii Five-0.
Scott Conn?
I think. It was a one and done. It was just a season long.
Weird.
It was cool vampire. It was about as cool a vampire show as you could.
Forever Night. No, but, it's a comedian.
But she's got one of those phases where she just constantly looks like she's about to cry.
Anyway, Girl in the Fireplace is the tale of an impossible romance unfolding at different speeds for the time-crossed lovers, closing in tone to magical realism that science fiction, blah, 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 whatever. It's very Steve Moffat-y, love tangled in timelines, worlds bleeding into each other.
It's where they're taking the ship and turning it into human bodies, right? Or no, am I thinking of something different?
I have no idea.
The one with Marie Antoinette?
I don't even remember.
The one?
I don't know who I am anymore. Number three, I'm just going to skip it. Number three, The Empty Child and the Doctor Dances, season one, episodes 9 and 10. Let's see what happens in this one. It's the one with the gas mask child.
Yeah.
Was a terrifying, not really monster.
This is where you
meet Captain Jack.
Yeah. Because Captain Jack has something that from salvage or something that he stole and he's trying to sell it. But it turns out it contains a weird little healing virus that ends up turning everyone into this dead child.
Right. Time.
You won't scary. Mommy.
The introduction of omnisexual time traveling con man Jackton. Whoa, Jackton.
She's so heart breathtaking by him.
Of omnisexual time traveling con man Captain Jack made for some of the funniest dialogue in this series' history, and the just this once everybody lives finale, long before it became cliche, was joyous. And there's a so these next. Number two and number one make it into the number one and number two spots on a lot of different lists than I found. But it's up to you to decide where, you know, you think they belong. Mm. On this BuzzFeed article, number two is Blink, your first introduction to the Weeping Angels, and where you meet Carey Mulligan.
Yeah.
As Sally Sparrow. It's a good episode. It's a good introduction for the Weeping Angels. I don't like that they keep bringing them back.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good episode. The Doctor isn't really in it.
He's kind of in it, but he just keeps being replayed.
Yeah.
It's like this guy knows exactly what I'm saying. Icon.
And then BuzzFeed's number one episode is Human Nature, the Family of Blood. It's the one where the Doctor doesn't know he's a doctor.
Oh.
And he like... is.
I'm sorry. I truthfully disagree with this list. I'd put Blink above that. In fact, I would shoot that one down past
this
the top
episode.
10.
I won't lie, this episode did make me very mad.
It annoyed the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it was... Here's the reason I think it makes the top of the list is because this was probably written by somebody in the UK. Because it focuses a lot on World War One and how the schools were at that time.
Uh-huh.
Much in the same vein of how... I can't tell you how many people I know love The Wall from Pink Floyd. It's a good album, but the movie is way too focused on certain aspects of British life.
So, it's a story about the horrors of war, the oppressive weight of duty, and yes, the nature of being human. Tennant gives his finest performance as the all-too-human John Smith, quietly falling in love, but haunted by fantastical dreams of another life. The supporting performances are flawless, from the always wonderful Jessica Hines, as an increasingly panicked Freema... And an increasingly panicked Freema...
you can't say her last
Martha
name,
Jones. To creepily arrogant Harry Lloyd and the wise beyond his years Thomas Sangster. The parallels between the school children on the brink of World War One and the John Smith doctor himself, forcibly stripped of innocence and thrown into a world of violence, are subtly but powerfully drawn and resonate with a classic Doctor Who theme, the terror of growing up.
The one good thing about this episode for me is that you find about the Watch.
Yes.
Which later introduces the Master.
Yes.
But... I'm sorry, that's not a one or a two. That's got to go down.
Sorry, Pumpkin.
There's other episodes that are far better than that.
Well, there was another list.
Is it the worst?
No. Well, it's top... Let's see. This is the one from IO9, and I just stole its top five modern episodes. Number five was Blink. Number four was The Doctor's Wife.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not the Wedding of River Song. Anyway, then Midnight, then Vincent and the Doctor, and number one is Turn Left.
I had respect for IO9.
Sorry.
No, it,
at least I think that was the order I wrote.
You know, it's
in.
Not terrible because my taste is different. I mean, if you're measuring them up all together, there's a lot of Doctor Who-y episodes, as they're called.
Yeah.
Where there's just too much happening and very... You know, very beyond what is normal for a television show.
Mm-hmm.
With one or two exceptions, I agree with most of those lists.
Hmm. Well, then let's talk about what I think is the new number one episode, the 50th anniversary special, The Day of the Doctor.
I hope you're not just going to say that it's all that because we saw Capaldi's eyes.
Capaldi.
Capaldi.
Yes, his eyes were incredible. It was the only moment in the whole episode where I shouted, "Holy shit!" and it caused a frenzy.
You didn't shout "Holy shit" when you saw Tennant making out with the Queen.
that whole thing.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
Anyway, let's talk about what you liked. Crystal can even chime in on this one because she saw it a couple times.
Which I'm kind of curious how you're enjoying this conversation as we.
No, it is like I really like these conversations because then that gives me stuff to look for. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I'm gonna go find this person and do their background, and it's interesting to me. So to be able to like do the research and kind of cram, it's like cramming for my, you know, I like kind of had to cram this information in, but then still to be able, it was such a good movie. I'm gonna call it a movie. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that's how I went in.
It was 90 minutes long.
It's
a fucking movie.
It was a movie. And I was watching it. And I was watching it as a movie. And I said it on the other show that we do occasionally. That what interested me so much is this was and is to date the largest worldwide broadcast event ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that. To me, interests me so much because I'm like, what? I could be watching with people across the world, and this is so big. I want to be a part of it, and so that's what intrigued me to watch it. And I was kind of like, I went in half-heartedly, like it's gonna be weird, and I'm kind of gonna get it. And then I started crying. I was like, what the hell?
Because
I knew enough. I knew enough to, you know, and because of the other thing that we do occasionally, we talk on it on there, you know, and so I know the moments that make the Whovian sad. I know when they're happy because I'm there with it. So
then what was your first you cried moment?
I really have to try to remember. So we open, and actually, you know what? I got a little goosebumpy when she like drove the motorcycle into the TARDIS, and it's like, you know, yeah, I'm like, oh, look at that badass, and he's just sitting there reading a book like he didn't care, but then he gets like a little smirk on his face, and I love that about the Doctor. Also, I see it in the different show, you know, the different episodes that I have watched, is that he tries to be serious sometimes, but you still see like the corner of his mouth turned up. So it's kind of a game to him as well. Mm-hmm. Even though he's saving the world, it's kind of a game to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first like chills moment. Really, when the first tear came down was kind of towards the end. Maybe that wasn't the first one. But I'll have to. But I distinctly remember doing the kind of the oh kind of the audible.
Was it when he went to hit the button on the box?
And the bad wolf tells him, you know that sound that brings you know hope to everyone, mm-hmm. to yeah. everyone, even to you. And then you and both of them appear. Yeah, I'm like, oh, that was the audible cry. So
for me, this was just. I there were a few teary moments, but the majority of it was just, oh, this is cute. Oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
Just, you know, little nod to Tom Baker with the scientist and the scarf.
Oh, by the way, she should be the new companion.
No.
Yeah, she's got the dedication for
she's
it.
The cute.
She's got an inhaler. You can't.
She's got a defect.
I know.
She's defective.
You know
she's
why
defective.
You know why none of us would be great companions? He runs a lot.
Crystal and I would be fine.
Yeah, I could run.
You run a lot everywhere.
We could put skates on.
Yeah. Be the first roller skating companion.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then I do want to talk about like.
It just looks like you have to be a marathon runner to be a doctor's
Yeah. Well,
companion.
And I want, because I know this got brought up as well. Maybe we'll go, let's talk about the movie, and then I'll ask you guys my questions about Doctor Who.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
So I was, as far as a movie as a whole, I was less interested in the Zygons, even though it was kind of interesting to see them return.
Yeah.
I've watched it 3 times.
I've only watched it once.
Technically more, but I'm not admitting to
it. Yeah, you have 3 that I'll admit to.
The whole Zygon storyline is nice to tie in and make everything flow. Like, the reason why they're at 1562 or whatever they were with Elizabeth I. But at the same time, you really stop giving a crap about that story. And it really becomes, I want to see how the 3 doctors fare with each other.
Yeah.
Because
that was pretty.
I admit that when I had it on DVR, I kept rewinding through the minute Matt Smith gets there until the next doctor, or until the 8th, the war doctor shows up. Because just the dialogue between the two of them is great, where they're just like, they're comparing the screwdrivers.
Yeah.
Right? He goes, compensating for what? Well, you know, regeneration's a lottery. Oh, cool. Isn't he cool? I'm the doctor and I'm so cool. Oh, wait, I'm wearing sand shoes. You know?
Yeah, I love that.
Just
too.
Insulting each other while still being clever. You know, Matt Smith, even though he's like, he realizes he shouldn't be there, he still grabs the fez and introduces himself to the queen, you know?
Yeah, and he's like, yes, take us to the tower. Gramps and sand shoes, take us all.
Grandpa, they're not sand shoes. Yes, they are.
So I like the way that they I like how they describe the doctors. So John Hurt, obviously the war doctor, mm-hmm. the one who basically destroys Gallifrey.
Yeah, the past or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the one who, you know, causes all these problems in the first place. And then they kind of skip over Christopher Eccleston, who is, you know, the angry doctor.
Yeah.
And
the angry
But then
dark
they describe
doctor.
I think, this is more me, but I think Eccleston's more of a doctor in mourning.
Okay.
And then and then Tennant is.
And Tennant
is exactly what he is. He's
Tennant
the
is the doctor that remembers, the doctor that regrets. And then you have Matt Smith, the doctor who forgets. And that makes Matt Smith's doctor more likable to me because he he is purposely forgetting all of the tragedy that he's caused, and that's why he is the way he is. That's why he's wacky all the time.
Yeah, that makes
sometimes
sense.
Serious.
It's like
I like the way that they treated that.
Yeah, that makes I like that too.
And it adds a little more depth to his character it than does. Was before. Because
and especially when he's with the other two doctors, you can see it. He's more childlike than the other two, you know, because you, and you have David Tennant, who is more morose and more also mournful.
Yeah,
you
and I like
that. You can see he's aged a bit since we last saw him. I'm just saying they do. I'm not. I love Tennant, but at the same time, they do one too many close-ups on him where you can tell.
And then
the theater took a frying pan to his eye.
Here's how I thought it was gonna end.
Okay.
This is what my thought that I have like halfway through the thing. They, you know, they explain the whole the moment the box that can whatever, and I'm like, oh my gosh, John Hurt. It's like Doctor Who. It was kind of like the goat, like the Christmas Carol. You have the ghost of, you have the Doctor of Christmas Past, the Doctor of Christmas Present, and then the Doctor of Christmas Past again. And John Hurt saw, you know, the results, the consequences of his actions. And
but we have a little more detail before we get into that. The object is called the Moment.
Right.
I don't know. Where did they get well, the name from?
But actually, I was just reading right here. There was actually, they said it's been in other episodes, the Moment has.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I do not recall this.
I'll find you what
but the thing episode. Has, Go but on. The thing has a conscience, or the OS developed a conscience, which is like, you know, your iPhone yelling at you for looking at porn.
Yeah.
But, you know, he tries to do what he needs to do, and it forces him to interact and, you know, stands in judgment of him. But essentially what it's doing is giving him an opportunity to not do it.
So it okay, so
it's giving him an opportunity to go into a different timeline and see what his action will create.
Mm-hmm. Now the Moment, it says, was in David Tennant's last episode. And one of the Time Lords says he still possesses the Moment and he'll use it to destroy the world.
Oh.
Oh.
There's a lot happening, because that's a two-parter episode with a lot of
Doctor
Who-y bullshit that is annoying. Like, but was it really necessary to turn everybody into the Master? You know what
yeah.
I mean? So there's a lot. There's a lot to process, especially in the last 15 minutes.
So halfway, you know, through the episode, I come to the realization, this is how I think that the episode is going to end, mm-hmm. and how we're going to get more regenerations. I thought that he wasn't going to hit the button and therefore negate the purpose of David Tennant and Matt Smith. So it would be like their existence never happened and he would therefore regenerate into Peter Capaldi.
Really?
I thought that's what was going to happen.
See, but then you're in a... that's a crux as a writer that you don't want to take. Because now all of a sudden you're saying, oh, by the way, the last 7 years you invested of your life into,
I know,
mean jack shit.
See, and to me, that's very exciting. That's something I would love to see, but I know the world would revolt. So
we, like you and I, we can start a TV series and we could do that to people and see what happens. It'd probably be the
murder.
End of our we'd be in a bunker underneath.
But
the
then,
city.
Like, obviously, that never happened. So
yeah, but. With that not happening, are you disappointed with the ending?
No. Not disappointed. I just, you know, there are directions I would like to see things go in, and that often never happens. I'm like, well, if I was writing the show, here's what I would do.
I'm happy that they didn't really interrupt much or create that much confusion for fans, because and I've been asked this a few times, and it's not mentioned much online, because people, I think, you either know or trying to explain to you, you don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up Tennant's doctor in between is it the Waters of Mars or whatever the other special was during that time,
uh-huh.
and the End of Time,
mm-hmm.
when he gets out of the booth and talks to the Ood, and he's just like, oh, it's with Elizabeth I, you know,
mm-hmm.
not quite. And it kind of gives you a reason why in the Shakespeare code she was pissed off when she saw
yeah.
him. Like, because essentially he married her and must have darted off very quickly after.
Cool, because wasn't she the Virgin Queen?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Got
You're
married
like,
and I died the Virgin Queen.
You're like, I know what happened.
No, I know it didn't happen because he left. Yeah, no, I'm not disappointed with how it ended. It makes me look forward to the upcoming. It's going to be Clara and Peter Capaldi off on a grand adventure to find Gallifrey.
Which isn't that bad.
Mm-mm.
I mean, if you're going to do an episode arc, you know,
yeah,
might as well be trying to find your home. Although, I would really hate to see Timothy Dalton as the president again.
Oh, God. James Bond as
oh, please.
King of Gallifrey.
He was barely a Bond.
I know.
But the... I personally like how that whole thing turned out because there were enough fan moments where you could be satisfied. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so we didn't get... If a 90-minute episode, we got maybe 40 minutes of either two or all three doctors playing with each other.
Yeah.
So you didn't get a full 90 minutes. Oh, well, the world ain't perfect.
I think that's what I liked the most of the special was the interaction between all the doctors.
Was it? Is there something funny? Did I miss a funny thing? No,
I just realized the round things. I love the round things. What do they do? No idea.
Well, okay. So here's some things that I just found on this website that's interesting. So he's talking about the round things. What do those round things do? Well, now forward to the museum where they're talking.
Mm-hmm.
The two doctors.
I noticed this in the
background. And the background.
I see.
The round things, right?
It's the round things inside hexagons, which
yes.
is the current look.
Okay, so here's another thing that maybe that this story picked up on that maybe we need to pay attention to. So the girl, what was the girl's name with the asthma? Has the fourth doctor's scarf.
Oh.
Not only does she have the scarf, but she does this a lot. Shh. Just like the fourth doctor.
Mm. Oh.
Is that hinting to something? Also, this article mentions to go back and kind of take a peek at the storyboard when Clara goes into
the black archive. I'm sorry, I saw all the photos on there, and I saw what they were getting at, but after a while, there's just so much you can stare at strings on the wall connected to portraits and not think, okay, this is too fandom-y. I can't.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. And then what else was there?
I love that kind of stuff.
So they said also that speaking, the ravens of death were real. Did you catch at the beginning when she's like, these ravens are looking a bit sluggish. Tell Malcolm they'll need to get new batteries. When she's sitting out and eating her sandwich and looking over the ravens. So she's all, tell them they need new batteries. So what's another one that's... No, all the rest are pretty obvious. Like
I do want to ask you.
Yes, ask.
Both of you.
Okay.
Because I really haven't come up with a theory for it other than they just wanted to be cheeky and be all like, oh, look, the fourth doctor didn't really die or regenerate. What was up with, what do you think's going on with Tom Baker at the end there where he's like,
I think
the great curator?
I think that's just a guy who happens to look like.
The
fourth doctor, who's the curator of the museum. I think it's very tongue-in-cheek. Like, in my theory of canon,
yeah.
That's not the doctor. That's just the curator of the museum who happens to be a lot like the fourth doctor.
Yeah, and they do a lot of... There's so much of the, if you were me, if I were you, congratulations. You know,
yeah.
Like... that.
And he says the doctor knows.
Who...
Oh, who knows? That's right. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that was just. I think it was just a very cheeky. And he's not really the doctor.
It was nice hearing his voice again.
Yeah. Oh.
Because he had. I'm sorry, but of all the doctors of the first set, his voice sounded the most authoritative. Everybody else, they sound like they're having some fun. That sounds like everything's going all right. And even though Tom Baker is clearly having fun, he's got that authoritative British voice.
See, like I see clips of the first Doctor, William Hartnell, and like I get like he scares me. Like I feel like he's very intimidating.
You would not want to be his companion.
Yeah, would not want to be his companion.
No. Have you seen the special they made, An Adventure in Time and Space?
No, it's on my device.
You need to watch that
with Argus Filch as. William Hartnell?
Yeah, where they tried to explain what they were going for when they when they hired him.
Oh, yeah, it's on my to-watch list. I should have watched. I wanted to watch it. There was a lot of things I wanted to watch before we did this episode.
All right, so here's a question I want to ask you guys. Mm. Would they ever make a girl a female doctor?
See,
they've
and can she be a ginger girl doctor?
They've unofficially teased it for years.
Yeah, well,
but
would they do it?
I doubt it.
I don't think they would, and I don't think that they should.
Why shouldn't they?
Women are stupid. No,
they've talked about it in the series that there are girl women time lords.
I know, but the doctor that we going to be changing sexes.
Are you saying that women can't be doctors? Is that
no?
It?
Women can totally
sexist.
Women can totally be doctors if they are born women and continue to regenerate. You know, they stay. They believe they stay a woman.
According to canon, you can turn into a woman.
Why would you want to? Women are the worst.
Again, the regeneration's a lottery. You don't really have a say in how you end up looking.
See, and I thought on our other show that we do, I was told that you do get a choice because I know he's always wanting to be a ginger.
Yeah, well, he always wants to be a ginger.
He wants to be a ginger, but he doesn't.
That's why I got confused.
It's like in the doctor,
from our other show.
It's like in The Doctor's Wife where she says, "Did you wish really, really hard?" You know. I mean, he can wish all he want, but what happens through every regeneration? Like, you're such a classy lady.
Classy bro.
Your boyfriend is so lucky to have you.
Damn straight.
Look at Tennant's first appearance. He goes to talk. He's like, "New teeth. Mm-hmm. I'll get used to that." Like. Mm-hmm. You can't as
well,
a time
Matt
lord
Smith
sit
does
back
it too.
He even checks everything to make
he
sure it's still there.
Thing.
Yeah, I like when he sees him. He's like, "I've never seen it from the outside. He's skinny, proper skinny."
Matchstick man.
Yeah. So, like I said, I guess I don't think they would, and I don't think they should, because Doctor Who is just Doctor Who's a man.
All right.
Okay. You say no.
That's just me.
No.
I say,
why not?
Why not? I couldn't care less if it stayed men forever or if they changed it up into a woman for a while. I mean, you gotta figure they going into this special. You hear they kept doing interviews with casting and writers and people involved with the show and the. All glorifying over it, like, "I think Doctor Who will be around in another 50 years. We'll be celebrating the 100th anniversary." If that's true, at some point in time, you're going to start experimenting. And you're going to try new things.
You have to. So that kind of leads me into my next question. Now that I think with Matt Smith and this Day of the Doctor bringing on new fans, do you think we're going to see less typical Whovian-style shows in order to try and bring Doctor Who more mainstream? Does that make sense? You know, because I think sometimes Doctor Who can be so far out there that people are like, "I don't get it. I don't understand." Do you think it's going to be a little less fanny, you know, so they're not going to be doing so many callbacks to all these different doctors and different to try and bring the new fans on board?
I think it's going to be a combination of the two. I think, like, the 50th anniversary special, they will do a lot of callbacks to older doctors to kind of regain that old fandom back.
Which is what they did. I mean, they got every doctor that was alive, except Eccleston being the stick in the mud that he is. A real actor. And voice actors to do versions of the first three to basically pay homage to that whole lineage. Right. And so there's a sense of pride with the people who make the show. Like, I think they realize we have something here. Because if you take out the 19 or so years that they weren't doing anything, this comes pretty close to being the longest running television series in history, with the exception of, you know, Bonanza, The Simpsons, Law and Order. Mm-hmm. You know, because they all have it for continuous. Even, I don't like to mention it because it's stupid, but Monday Night Raw from the World Wrestling Entertainment.
Oh, that
doesn't count. That's not TV.
Yeah. They count it because it's weekly and it goes. But yeah.
And it goes.
It's just going.
So I guess overall, it's keeping with show tradition. Would you recommend Doctor Who or not? The modern Doctor Who. Would you recommend modern Doctor Who or not?
Yes.
Yes.
Because there's... Why not? It's great science fiction. And to steal something from somebody else that I know and love who talks about Doctor Who incessantly, it's essentially a grown-ups kids TV show.
Yes.
It's a kids TV show for adults.
Correct. Yeah.
That's a great way to boil it down into just, you know, loving the show.
Yeah, I also would recommend it if you like time travel things and wackiness.
If you would like to see what happens when crazy people go and interrupt Shakespeare in his daily life.
Well, and I think it's when they're sitting in the cell on the day of the doctor and they're like, why are you so afraid of growing old? And they kind of just look at him like, because we're going to be you when we get old. You know, this is what we turn in. You know, this is what old means to us. And I think Doctor Who is kind of a way to stay young. You know what I mean? Don't be such a stick in the mud and be like, this is some cheesy shit. Just
don't
get into it. You know? Yeah. Don't be Eccleston.
Don't be an Eccleston.
Just get into it and enjoy it for what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go in and be like, this is way too stretching my mind. Well, that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to make sense right now. Or maybe dropping a breadcrumb for you to pick up later. So.
And this is one of those TV series where I have to stress this enough. Do not focus on every single minor detail. Because if you're not detail-oriented, you're going to hate this show.
It's kind of like my rule for comic books. You will never, ever understand everything that is going on in your comic book. They're going to mention things that you don't understand. They're going to talk about stuff that you don't know about. You just kind of have to go with it.
And I'm assuming, like any TV show like this, there's stuff in there that we don't know about yet. Mm-hmm. And there's probably some stuff that they started that they gave up on and it's just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure the stuff that's on the blackboard, even though it looks like the Day of the Doctor with the strings and the photographs, even though there's some cool stuff on there, there are people who are super obsessed that will dissect that for all it's worth and try and find out some hidden meaning for what you're about to see that they haven't even written yet, right?
Yeah, stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave that up to them. Just enjoy the show.
Culture Crash was created and hosted by Rebecca Frost and Gavin Sheehan and is recorded and produced by Crystal Nielsen. If you have something that you'd like us to review on the show, please send your suggestions to culturecrashpodcast@gmail.com or connect with us on Twitter at culturecrashslc or facebook.com/culturecrashslc.
Together, Gavin. We are doing a show.